Oh, such a good question.
Well, what do you come with these questions? That's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand.Live show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand.Live show. Welcome back, my wonderful audience. This is Ben Baker. Thank you guys for joining me week after week. We have a great conversation. We always have great guests. And I try to sit there and say, okay, what can we learn from people? It's not about what they do. It's about how they do it. And it's about sitting there going, what are the things that we can learn together? What are the things that we can gain some insights into and be able to make sure that we walk away from this hour, this 35 minutes, a little bit smarter than when we walked in? So this week, I have a great guest. Mark Mitchell from Wizard Strategies and I first got introduced through a great four-part conversation that we had online. Mark and I will talk about it together, but we came across this thing. We had a lot of fun together. Allison DeFord brought us all together. I'll put the link in the show notes for the conversations. You know, Mark, welcome to the show, and let's get into this.
Yes. Well, Ben, I'm so glad that Allison introduced us. I really like your philosophy and your message. And from having those conversations, like I learned so much from you and the other speakers, you know, and that's what I'm all about is, you know, continuing to learn and not assume that I've got all the answers. And so it was a great experience.
Yeah. Well, as I tell people, even Google doesn't have all the answers. So, so every once in a while, I go, this does not compute. It doesn't happen often, but. You know, we are all better off when we listen to each other, we understand each other, we value each other, and we all realize that there's things that we know, there's things that we don't know, and the more we can be open to sit there and go, you know what, I don't know about this, but you know what, Mark does, or Allison does, or Ray does, or Chris does, or whoever does, and be able to sit there and go, you know what, I've got people in my network that are way smarter than I am about, you know, and a number of issues, and my guests every week blow my doors. You know, the stuff that they're experts on. For me, it's like leading a masterclass every week and just sit there back and just sit there going, okay, give me your area of expertise and let me just soak it all in. So let's start off with the conversation that we had off air and let people know, first of all, a little bit about you, and then we're going to get into a great conversation.
Okay, great. So I started my career out and working for my father who had a small advertising agency. And I discovered that I preferred working with business-to-business clients more than I did business-to-consumer. It seemed like business-to-consumer was largely powered by how big your checkbook was. It's literally how much advertising can you afford? Where business-to-business, many times you could solve the problem with your brain rather than your checkbook. I've seen where a client thought they needed to spend a bunch of money on some marketing program. And I literally pointed out to them, have you picked up the phone and had a conversation with this customer? And did you share this with them? So why do we need to spend $20,000 or whatever on this marketing program when maybe we could solve it with a phone call? You know, and I just love to solve problems. And so I don't ever want to assume like, oh, okay, here's a client. Okay, they need to spend more money on advertising, and that's the answer. That would bore me silly. So I then left my father, which was a great experience because I had to be the artist, the writer, the everything, and went to a larger firm that specialized in building materials. And I just found my calling. I just loved it. I didn't know anything about how to build. I'm the most unhandy person in the world. I love the thought process where my first client was Owens Corning Fiberglass, and they'd come to me and say, okay, Mark, we're going to run this big TV commercial on the Super Bowl with the Pink Panther. It's going to be great. But, you know, we actually now need to sell something. So we need you to go out and interview builders and ride along with our salespeople and figure out what do we need to do to get builders to put more insulation in their homes. And so it was a perfect, you know, I just ate it up. I loved it. And I decided early in my career to stay focused in the area of building materials because there were every day a new problem, a new challenge. But also I found that everybody else wanted to go and do commercials for McDonald's or Nike or do a film in Hollywood. And I'm going, okay, you guys all go there. I'm going to stay here and it'll be easier for me to be successful because all the people smarter than me, they want to go do commercials for Nike. So I'm like, okay, this is, you know, I learned to stay focused. And so from there, you know, when I would see friends of mine that had ad agencies, I thought, okay, you can realistically work with clients within this geographic area, unless you have some specialization. And I quickly learned that by focusing, you know, I can pretty easily get a meeting or a call with anybody in the industry because they've come to know my expertise. And so I focus on building materials. The other thing I focus on in building materials, the channel is very important. So the architect, the contractor, the dealer, distributor, the Home Depot buyer, those are more important than the homeowner, more important than the person that's buying a home. And that's my area of expertise and where I've stayed focused.
And that's incredible because I agree with you. You know, I came from the construction industry. I started off, you know, pulling wires and dropping drywall and, you know, watching buildings get erected, working for my old man. And when I turned 18 or 19 years old, he and I looked at each other. I said, Dad, I want to grow this business. I want this business to grow. It was a commercial renovation firm. He says, I want to be part of this. And my dad says, no, I like the company just the way it is. And we agreed to disagree. And it was probably one of the pivotal moments for us.
Right.
It was probably one of the best things for me because it allowed me to go out on my own. It allowed me to realize that, you know what, maybe it's not the construction industry, it's communicating the construction industry. And, you know, I took a lot of pivots, a lot of changes. I ended up in high tech and, you know, ended up in marketing. But I agree with you, the B2B marketplace may not be as sexy, may not be as, you know, well-funded, but it's far more interesting, at least it is to me, in terms of how people communicate, how people build trust, how they listen to each other, understand each other, value each other, and build these channel relationships to be able to drive value than in the retail market where it seems to be very reactive. So I'm with you 100% in that marketplace. What I really want to get into is what we were talking about off air. And I think that it's a really important conversation because it's all about communication. It's all about how do you communicate? Because in the world of COVID and everything that's coming up go beyond COVID, I don't want this conversation to be concentrated on COVID, but it's a reality. You know, it is what it is. But what it means is beyond COVID, as we move in, we're not going to be face-to-face, belly-to-belly, nose-to-nose with people as often as we normally have been. You know, we're not shaking hands. We're not going to as many trade shows. We're not, you know, having that personal interaction with people. So the question is, how do we communicate? How do we build that relationship? And how do we enable those conversations to happen and that trust to be built when we can't shake hands and look at each other eye to eye? And you had some great thoughts about it off air. So why don't we start there?
Yeah. So I saw back in March, two kinds of companies. I saw companies that go, oh, this is going to lead to a recession. I remember the last recession. I better start hunkering down, laying people off, cutting back, stopping all spending. And then I saw other companies say, okay, this is a new challenge. Mm-hmm. And I'm a leader. And we need to deal with this challenge. Maybe we need to pivot to a different market type of customer. Maybe we certainly need to change the way we communicate. We're not going to depend on trade shows. We're not going to be traveling to see customers face to face. I think you and I have probably been through like four recessions. And I found everyone is totally different. Everyone affects a different part of the marketplace. But people tend to remember the last one and they don't look and say, okay, what is this recession going to affect? Okay. And so they make quick judgments. And so I saw a couple of companies that literally made no change and I saw their sales decline. These are some impressive companies laying people off. And when I talked to some of their people, they said, oh, Mark, our head of sales only thinks that face-to-face is the only way to sell. And so he doesn't see that he has a way to sell. And so our sales are declining. He can't imagine you can do things virtually. You can do things, you know, with texts or whatever. And then I saw companies that just said, okay, we're just going to move forward. And so now what I'm having people say, okay, I'm getting used to this, but how can I do a better job with today, the situation we're facing, and what's the future going to look like? Mm-hmm. And so right now, in my area, building materials, we'll say, depending on the geography where you're located, we'll say how bad COVID is where you are, that if it's not that bad, you know, people are going out on job sites, there's still construction going on, they're meeting with customers. And some customers are open to it, some customers are not. And mm-hmm. so you just have to adapt to what the customer is. But what I think the customers discovered is that it's being reinforced to them that they're overworked and understaffed, and that their time is their most valuable asset.
Yep.
And if I'm going to have a face-to-face meeting with someone, I'm going to at least use up 30 minutes. In the first minute or two, if this is a new person calling on me, I will know if this meeting is going to have any value or not. Just the way the conversation starts.
Absolutely.
I'm a polite person. And so I will sit there for 28 more minutes. Okay. Letting you go
through your stuff.
Before you
say, thank you very much, I appreciate your time, and send them out the door. Yeah.
Right. And then even if I know the person, I'm comfortable, credible, all this kind of stuff, I'd love to meet with them. I'm very busy. I think that we could handle this by a virtual call and we could do it in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Okay. We can cut the niceties. We can just get to what I need to know. And I see the customer saying there is a time and place for a face-to-face meeting, but I now see that I have many other options of how to communicate that make me more efficient. Even if the salesperson can't wait to get out on the road again, I think they're going to run into customers going, whoa, 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 right?
My time is far too valuable. I don't have time to slot you in and give you 30 minutes of my time.
Right. And then I see what I consider the more successful salespeople. They also value their time.
Yes.
And they recognize that the right customer needs them. But they're bringing value. They're bringing expertise to the right customer. They can help that customer. And so they're also starting to say, okay, should I fly to Kansas City just because I can? Or a person said they'd meet with me. Is that the best use of my time? If I were talking to people virtually, how many conversations could I have in a day versus if I have to fly to Kansas City, get there the night before, stay in a hotel, get to the meeting, get back to the airport, fly back home? And now—
And all the expenses that go along with it. Never mind the time, it's the expense that goes along with it.
Well, and now the management of these companies now are looking, saying, wow, gee, look at how much money we're saving on travel entertainment and trade shows. And gee, our sales in most cases haven't dropped off. The building materials industry's been surprised, but depending on if it's residential new construction, residential remodeling, and even parts of commercial construction are booming. As you and I were talking earlier, I think you learned earlier in your career how to make a sales call.
Yeah.
And you probably went with somebody that taught you, took you under their wing or whatever. And then you went out and did some yourself. And, you know, there's certain things that you learned. Like you went into the restroom beforehand and looked at yourself in the mirror. You made sure you didn't have bad breath.
Between your teeth.
Right. You were dressed appropriately. You know, if you had leather shoes on, they were shined, right? And you were ready to go. And so now, just like the ability to make a good live sales presentation, you need to be able to do it virtually. Mm-hmm. It is a different skill.
Yes.
Because there isn't someone to mentor you, or the most senior salesperson that helped you earlier in your career, they don't know what they're doing either. And so I'm on probably 3 Zoom calls a day, and I'm amazed at how people don't recognize the importance of this. Mm-hmm. I think back when public relations used to be a more important tool than I think it's viewed today, that an executive would have media training. His PR firm would say, okay, we're going to have you interviewed at this trade show by these different magazines or whatever, and we're going to train you how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they would pay the PR firm and spend it, whatever, a day or half a day getting media training. And yet we send everybody out onto doing these virtual calls, whether they're on Zoom or whatever other app, and without any training and many times without equipment. Like, company gives you a laptop, company gives you a cell phone. Well, I think today maybe they should be giving you a microphone and at least a webcam, you know?
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. And there's a big thing to unpack there, because the one thing I'm hearing behind this whole thing is professionalism.
Right.
And you're right. You and I are of an age that when we first learned how to do sales, you did not go out on your own, period. End of story. You had a mentor that followed you for 3 to 6 months, that took you under their wing, that got paid an override on what you did, that taught you how to conduct a meeting, how to manage a client, how to be able to build relationships, and you were able to move forward. First of all, that doesn't happen anymore. Companies give you a set of business cards and a phone and maybe a territory, and that's it. And they assume, okay, you're a salesperson, go for it. That kills the brand, first of all, and we'll get back to that. The second thing is that you're right. We're in a completely different world. When we're dealing with a situation where we are online, first of all, I don't know about you, but I have 2 24-inch monitors in front of me. You're on the left monitor. On the right monitor is your website up. I've got email. I've got social media. Everything would be binging in the background. I've got a timer going on. There's lots of things going on at the same time that can distract me. My thing is, I have it set up so I can be able to have all your information that's with you. But right. People don't know how to do that. They don't know how to say, what are the things to turn off? What are the things to turn on? What are the things that should be concentrated? You have a very professional background. You have, you know, books on one side. It's clean. It's not cluttered. You're presentable. You're wearing a nice shirt. You have all that. People don't understand to make sure that their background is not all cluttered, that they don't have a bunch of boxes lined up inside that just looks terrible. We talked about lighting. We can get into that a little bit more. We can talk about mics. We can talk about proper headphones so we don't have echo and feedback. All those technical things that most people are just not learning. Nobody's teaching them because nobody knows. Everybody's getting that and say, oh, you know, just jump on Zoom or just jump on GoToMeeting. Without anybody actually training them, wait a second, this is how you use this software properly. You know, because I don't know about you, I've been on GoToMeetings, I've been on Webinar Jam, I've been on Zoom, I've been on Teams, I've been on 15 other platforms, and each one of them is a little different. So as a presenter, you're fumbling around a little bit going, okay, how do I share a screen? How do I make sure that I watch the people, see who's got their hand up, making sure that I control the meeting properly? There's all these things that we're not teaching people because people are not paying attention to this is a new medium.
Right. You know?
And that's the thing that we need to sit there and look at this as a medium and going, how do we utilize it properly? How do we make sure that we build trust and are effective using this new medium because it's powerful? You know, we can have 10-minute meetings. We don't have to go traveling across the city. We don't have to go traveling across the world. We can have 8 meetings in a day that are productive instead of one because you've spent all day flying or driving. You know, there's all these things to go along with it, but you're right. We need to teach people how to be effective within the situation. You told me a story offline about a guy you were talking about who was almost did it right.
Yes.
And tell me that story, because you were saying, good, they did this well, they did this well, they did this well. Oh, they blew this one. So just give that as an example, because that's a great way for people to have an idea of what can go well and what can blow the whole situation.
Yeah. So since March, I think we all have kind of shifted our viewing habits, maybe from network television to things like Netflix, streaming services. And I've just become addicted to YouTube. And one of the things I enjoy is I'm seeing who are good influencers. Like, there's a guy named Matt Reisinger that's fantastic. and what are companies doing that are smart uses of YouTube? And so up pops this thing this weekend, and here is the president of an LED lighting company, and he's done a little, I'm going to say 3-minute video about his company. And I thought, okay, cheers for you for doing a video. Okay. You didn't go, if I don't spend $20,000 and have this big professional crew come in or whatever, I can't do it, And so cheers for that. And he looked nice. He had a nice shirt with his company's logo embroidered on the shirt. The background looked like he was in a nice office, with a fern plant in one corner and a bookshelf somewhere else. And it looked really good, right? But the one thing that he blew it, which is the most common problem that I see, is his face was not lit.
Mm-hmm.
So while everything was great, except his face was just, it wasn't black, but it was a little too dark for me to really get to know this person. We're used to being able to see our faces and go, is this someone I would like? Is this someone who's funny? Is this someone I trust? And part of that is not just the words you say, but it's like, I can kind of read your face. Mm-hmm. And so that's the number one. I'm amazed at how many people that I have calls with, and it's like CEOs of companies, and their number one mistake is that their face is not lit. And it usually is because they have some bright background behind them. It looks out on some sunny day. And so the camera's trying to adjust and have everything correctly lit, which it can't do. So it darkened, the face
ends up darkening.
And if they would just close the drapes, it would fix the problem right away. If they would just move to like a plain wall background, it will fix the problem. And then they can always improve it.
Yeah.
And they can always just grab a table lamp and put it in front of you. Maybe take the top off or something, so you just have a bare ball, but you don't have to go out and get expensive lighting. You can, but just having any kind of light source in front of you that makes your face lit. It's like, I can't believe people don't recognize this, mm-hmm. And then the next thing to your point is people don't think about the background. And the background can either look, as you brought up, unprofessional, or the other thing that happens is the background can become distracting.
Yes.
So in the unprofessional thing, people look at the background and it adds to their definition of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got a messy apartment in the background or a messy kitchen, that says, okay, kind of a messy person maybe, or what it makes
it's
a statement.
It's like giving away cheap pens.
Yes, it makes a statement. And then The other one I find is, I don't know about you, but I can't help myself. I'm trying to like read the poster over the guy's shoulder. So I'm distracted. I'm not focused on the person, and they should be the hero. And then just using the camera on their laptop and not cleaning the lens, and so they look maybe foggy or blurry or not sharp or in focus. And then even if you took the headset that you have to listen to music at the gym and use that as opposed to the speakers on your computer, you will hear much better. And ideally, you have some sort of basic microphone. Doesn't have to be a big $400 microphone like this, but some sort of microphone, you will dramatically improve. And then the final one is just, we all suffered a little bit from, I'm not going to the office today. I'm not going to make sales calls, so I don't have to get dressed.
Or shave,
right? And so we've taken this new degree of casualness, mm-hmm. which then says, okay, well, if you're that casual, you're, once again, there's casual and there's professional. And so if you look that casual, is that how it is to do business with you? Like, well, maybe I'll send you in your order. Maybe I'll check this. Maybe I won't, whatever, as opposed to like someone that looks buttoned up and professional. And those are just the basic things. I've seen a couple of companies that have taken this seriously, went out and invested in webcams and noise canceling headphones and headsets for their salespeople.
Yeah.
And given them some training. And even as basic, if you have a coworker and you say, hey, let's have a call together and I'll evaluate you and you evaluate me. Early on in March said, okay, I'm going to be making a lot of calls from home. Where the heck can I do it from? I got my wife to give me this teeny little corner in one of the spare bedroom. And so I created this little set here. And I am crammed in a little corner here. All right? It sits here every time, and it didn't take me much to do. But by having a little time and care. I'm not a creative designer or set designer, but I just thought, okay, let's, and then I ran it by a couple of people. I called them up and said, hey, how's this look? And they helped me with some suggestions to improve it. So it's like run it by somebody else.
And the key word you used is set. It is. You are on a stage because we're sitting here going, this is a two-dimensional version of ourselves.
Yep.
And the more we can present ourselves in a way that people are going to engage with, they're going to believe, they're going to trust, they're going to value. It is because what your original point about the lighting, I mean, I've got a 5K professional light in front of me. I think I paid less than $100 for it. You know, you can get an O-ring LED light for less money than that. It doesn't have to be expensive. You don't have to spend $400 for a mic. My first mic that I used when I started podcasting 4 years ago, I think I paid $69 for.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be expensive, but at least what it does is it puts you at that next level.
Right.
My pet peeve is the Zoom backgrounds that people, you know, they back up and all of a sudden they fade into the background or their hands disappear, whatever, or they have, you know, this look like, oh, I'm at a beach somewhere and look at the sand and look at the palm trees going, you know what? You're right. First of all, it's distracting. Second of all, it's unprofessional. And third of all, you're sitting there going, why? Like, why are you doing this? My thing is the background that I have is actually, it's a pop-up banner. It's 7 feet wide by 7 feet tall. It hides the back of my office because there are things behind me. You know, there's boxes in there. There's my treadmill. There's all those things, but you'd never know it looking at me because what you're seeing is a professional logo with my background on it.
Right.
And we've good. We've created a set. We've created a small area that is focused in of who we are, tells a story about us, gives a level of professionalism, and allows people to not be distracted by the background and enable us to have those conversations that are meaningful. So I love everything that you've been saying.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the, what we'll call it, green screen background where you can drop in things, mainly because many of them, like if I move my head or something, it looks fake. You can tell right away. And then number two is if you're going to do that, then create an image which reinforces your story. A picture of the Golden Gate Bridge is like, so what? Or a beach, right? It's not.
Or this huge office space that everybody knows is not yours. It's just a background.
Right. And so, you know, why not create something? Or if you want to use green screen or your company wants you, then the company should provide you with some imagery that reinforces your story, your products, your products in use, your products being installed, you on a job site. I don't know. Just, you know, if you're going to do that. And I've seen a few people make it work, but I've seen too many people have like a beach scene. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what's that have to do with business? You know, does that say to me you'd really rather not be here? You know, you'd rather be on a beach than doing business? I don't know. Yeah, so I'm not a big fan. But, you know, I'd love to get your feedback. So two areas I'm wrestling with right now, and I'm having more of my followers reach out to me, and they're asking two questions. One is, in a live meeting, you're able to read other people's body. You know, you can read, are they engaged? Are they interested? Are they not believing me? You know, you can read and then you can adjust. You can know, I better go back and repeat this. This is not the right way to do this or whatever it is, but you can adjust on the fly when you're meeting with them. So how do you get past that on a virtual call, or can you? And then the second one is, it's hard to keep people engaged. And so it's very easy for your viewer to multitask, like think they're listening to you while they're checking texts or emails on their phone. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in a live meeting, they would be not doing that. You know, they would be,
you throw a chalk at them.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. But they would be paying attention. Right. So do you have any thoughts on the body language and the engagement challenges?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And let's attack one and then we'll attack the other. The first thing you got to realize is when you're dealing with your body language and being able to read people, the question is it a one-on-one meeting or is it one-to-many meeting? You know, if you're dealing one-to-one, the suggestion that I have on Zoom or whatever platform that you are in is run in speaker mode. So therefore, you have a full-size image of the person on your screen. It's not these two little, 4-inch by 4-inch boxes in the background of whatever it is. you have the person who you're speaking to on the full size of your screen. I mean, that's how I've got you right now. I'm up in the top right-hand corner. You take up the entire screen. That way, first of all, when I'm looking at it, I'm looking above your head, below your camera. So therefore, I'm technically looking into your eyes.
Yes.
You know, as best I can. It doesn't happen all the time, but you know, it's important to do that. So therefore, there's that connection there. Second of all, because you have that person in speaker mode, you have a far better chance of being able to read them. It's a lot easier. The larger the image, the better chance, because they're 90% size instead of being 30% size.
Yes.
You can see more of the gestures. You can see more of the eye movement. You can see more of the body language, and you can have that engagement. It's not perfect. It's not, you know, phenomenal, but that's the way it is.
Yes.
When you're dealing with a one-to-many situation, especially when I'm the one speaking, I insist everybody has their camera on. And my attitude is, you wouldn't have your camera off if we're live. Why would you have your camera off if we're virtual? And people say, oh, well, I'm not comfortable being in front of the camera. Well, tough. Too bad.
Right.
You know, if we're all going to have conversation, if we're all going to be in the same room, if we're going to get everybody's opinion involved in this thing, I want to be able to see all of you. I want to be able to sit there and say, because when I'm speaking as a keynote speaker around the world and I'm up on stage, I can see when people got their hands crossed. I can see when people are rolling their eyes. I can see when people are leaning forward and listening and engaging and who I need to pay more attention, who's already, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid.
Right.
It's a lot harder when it's two-dimensional.
Yes.
And because of that, the more visual cues you can have by having people all having their camera on and all engaged is easier. Now, engaging them is a completely different story. What I found when I'm doing keynote addresses or if I'm delivering workshops or if I'm doing whatever is that, first of all, my talks are way shorter. If I was giving a 45-minute to an hour keynote, my keynote is probably 25 to 30 minutes at the most.
Right.
Yeah. You're giving a much shorter talk.
Yes.
And you're spending way more time in Q&A.
Yes.
And, you know, I prefer having the Q&A throughout the talk. Some people like to have it before, but I always let people know, I says, look, this is going to be a short conversation. There's going to be lots of time for communication. But the big thing that I do is I have three or four poll questions throughout the talk and sit there and say, you know, first of all, where are people from? What do you think about this? Do you believe in this or do you believe in this? And be able to have the answers come up as a pie diagram or a chart or something like that. So people can see not only where their answers come up, but where their answers come up relative to everybody else who's on the call. And, you know, all of a sudden, when, especially if you're using a software that says, okay, we're 92% done, we're 98% done, we're 100%, okay, we got everybody's opinion. You know, sometimes you're never going to get 100% opinion. There's going to be people that are just not going to answer your poll question.
No. Yeah.
But if you can sit there and say, oh, 93% of the people answered his poll question, I guess other people are listening. Maybe I should pay more attention. And it's the more you can get people involved, the more you can get people engaged, the more you can get them so they're part of the conversation, that their questions are being asked and answered, that their thoughts are being polled and that they matter,
right,
the more engaged they're going to be. If all of a sudden they're just sitting there, somebody go blah, 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 blah for an hour, five, whatever, I'll hit record. Maybe I'll watch it later at 1.5 or 2 times speed. But if all of a sudden, every few minutes, you're asking them a question and you're expecting an answer and you're doing Q&A back and forth and there's, and the speaker is watching the chatter in the chat room and responding to that as well.
Yes.
You know what? You're going to have a lot more engaged audience, and it's tough. Don't think it's easy. Don't think it's tough. You know, I find what there's, the more people I need, sometimes I need to have a second person involved, somebody who's watching the chat while I'm having the conversation, maybe a third person who's handling the technology,
right?
You know, depending on the size of the room and the number of people involved.
Right.
But it's all doable, but you got to make sure that it happens in a concert situation.
Yeah. And, you know, another one that I've learned to keep people engaged is, let's say there's myself and we'll say 10 people on the call.
Right.
And one person is the most important person in that group, right? One person's the president, the CEO, whatever they are, right? And there may be another person that's a close second place, right? And so what frequently happens is the conversation, if I'm one of the other participants, all of a sudden the conversation views into, let's say, I am talking to those two people and those other people might as well not even be in the room, right? And, right. But they have to stay because they're invited, right?
Yeah.
And so what I do is, you know, I have a like a notepad that has everybody's name written down and I will throw out questions to the lesser important people.
Absolutely. Make sure everybody's opinion is taken
well,
into consideration.
It does that. It voice. Does that. It also keeps you on your toes.
True.
Like, okay, I know Mark's going to ask the president about this and about that and about this, right? Oh my God, he's asking other people what they think. He might ask me. I need to, and all of a sudden I have to stop multitasking because I don't want to look stupid in front of the boss, you know? And
that's right.
So I love your polling idea. I love the chat room idea. If I'm trying to just do this as a one-man band, I found it distracting for me to try to stay focused on the conversation and manage the chat room. So I occasionally had a person whose job is to manage the chat room and they're literally sitting close by and, you know, they'll write something on a piece of paper and put it in front of me and I can quickly look and say, you know, and address that issue. And so I think we got three great ideas about keeping people engaged. And I like your idea for the body language on a one-on-one. And when you have, let's say, a group, I think you're going to have to replace body language by asking leading questions and then gauging the answer or response that you get from that too. It's just a different way of body language, I guess, would be my thought. Is that?
Absolutely. I think the more we can get people engaged and realize that having that checklist and getting more people engaged,
yes,
the better it is. Now, I got one question to ask you because we could sit here, we could talk forever and we will. We'll have more conversations offline and maybe do a repeat on this. But
yes, that'd be great.
I ask this question to everybody. When you leave a meeting and you get your car and you drive away or get off Zoom and say thank you very much and head off into the sunset, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Wow, that is a great question. You know, I think about the term trusted advisor. You should want the person to say, this person is knowledgeable and they have my best interests at heart. I'd like to be thought of as someone that if they had a question, they would reach out to me with the knowledge that I would try to help them answer the question, not turn it into, I'm going to sell you something. Now, some people are just diehard aggressive salespeople and they couldn't, they're like, what? What? You wouldn't, you know, always be closing, you know? And that works for some people and that's fine. But the customer is going to be reluctant to pick up the phone unless they're sure they're ready to buy your product. And I would rather have them reach out to me when they're trying to answer a question in which my product may or may not be the best solution for them and that I would candidly tell them.
And I love that. I mean, I think we should all strive to be trusted advisors. We should all trust to be someone that people trust that can pick up a phone and they realize that if you don't know the answer, you're going to help them get the answer. And I think that that's an important thing because you're right. Nobody wants to be sold. Nobody wants to always feel that someone's reaching into their pocket. And I think that if we can be the people that people trust, people that want to do business with, and people know that they're going to get great value every time they pick up the phone with us, that's where they're going to spend their money. So, Mark, thank you for being part of the show. Thank you for being such a wonderful guest. And I enjoyed the conversation immensely.
I've got one more thing I want to add to your point, and that is part of having that relationship with the customer is to let the customer also dictate or lead how they want to be communicated with. So it may be a Zoom call. It may be a phone call. It may be an in-person meeting. It may be a text message. It may be a message on LinkedIn. I mean, you have to let the customer kind of lead that as opposed to making an assumption or forcing your way on them.
Couldn't agree more.
But I've really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Me too. Thanks for being a great guest.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?